There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
When it comes to the festive season, you can't beat John Lewis, can you, Charlotte?
John Lewis is Christmas in the UK, isn't it?
And you can buy everything under one roof. Although we're not going under one roof this time, we're going online. But I do love the fact that I can buy everything from house decorations to stuff for the children, my husband, me, my beauty products, everything. It's all there.
It's also particularly good for fashion right now. They have the best cozy wear out there. If you are looking to snuggle up over the coming season, there is cashmere, there is loungewear, there is something for everybody.
They've also just launched their 12 Days of Christmas dressing campaign. They've collaborated with some of our favourite high street retailers, from Hush to Whistles, for an exclusive capsule collection of 12 amazing outfits. And there are sparkles for Christmas, as well as great loungewear. There's basically something for everyone.
Love it. And I don't know about you, but I will definitely be getting dressed up at home because it's Christmas and it wouldn't be Christmas without some sparkle. They're also doing these amazing virtual styling sessions, which you can do from the comfort of your own home. How does that work?
They are. You can speak to a John Lewis stylist over video call. They will help you go through existing pieces in your wardrobe and help you find new ways to wear them, and it's all for free.
Amazing. Well, with all that and free delivery over £50 and free click and collect on orders over £30, I can honestly say it's never made more sense to shop at John Lewis. So get on over there, johnlewis.com. I'm off. See you later.
See you, bye.
Hello and welcome to today's Sherlock's In Conversation With podcast. Today I'm joined by Jamie Lang, a man of many talents, co-founder of Candy Kittens, the company making sweets for grown-ups, a reality TV star on Made in Chelsea, and now, I feel like I should be singing, I won't, a dancing sensation on Strictly. I'm also joined by Charlotte Collins, my co-host on this podcast, and we are here to chat everything from becoming a celebrity, not you, Charlotte, him, starting a business, training for Strictly. You might give us, you know, a bit of gossip about Sophie, because she's now one of our Lux girls, and everything in between. How lovely to see you. How are you?
Thanks.
So you did just say that you're learning the samba today.
Can I just tell you now, doing Strictly Come Dancing is the most amazing thing, but it's also one of the worst things in the world.
Jamie, because just so you know, you are talking to two people who have never been more desperate to do anything like but Strictly in their life. Like, I've never wanted to do anything
true
more.
True story.
Guys, it is so full on, and this week I am dancing the samba to the song Papa Heyo, La La Leo. Yeah, the summer's all about being really sexy, and obviously that oozes out of me. So it's
Really worrying me. The samba's like, you know, it's the end of the game, isn't it, for most people?
Don't say that.
Isn't the samba the hardest dance?
Yeah, the samba's the hardest. So there's like little like ticks to each dance, supposedly. Honestly, if I met the samba in a pub, I would glass it. I hate the samba so much because it's all about like, it's this up and down movement. And I don't know about you guys. I don't know if you've
ever,
ever tried to like move your hips but keep your upper body still at the same time? And it just, it's impossible.
It's a roll, isn't it? It's the body roll, isn't it?
It's a body roll. It's being sexy. You're trying to have to channel Ricky Martin. But then I don't know if it's Ricky Martin that you have to channel. So I basically look like a middle-aged guy who is trying to be sexy and dance, but he looks hammered when he does it. That's what I'm looking like.
We're all on your side now, and we're going to back you through Samba Week, because that's a bit of a raw deal in week 3, if you ask me.
Listen, when you do something like Strictly, the first thing, you really don't want to go week 1 or week 2. It's just, you just don't, because you just think it's just one of the worst things. And honestly, every single night that you do it, before you go on stage, you're thinking, why am I doing this? You feel like you want to vomit. You feel like, oh, God, this is the worst thing in the world. And then when you start dancing it, it doesn't really get any better. And all you're doing is thinking, oh no, I've missed that one. Oh no, I've missed that. Oh no, I've missed that. And then when you complete it, it's the most incredible feeling.
It was great. We loved it. There was a lot of whipping in my house. And I've got three little people who think you are the bee's knees. So my husband's an accountant. He does not believe in voting in reality TV shows. Coco was like, Daddy, this is mummy's work. If he doesn't get through, then there's no podcast because he's on It Takes Two. So he was a very grumpy accountant as he handed his mobile over on Saturday night for us to vote for you.
There you go. You've got Georgie to thank for still
yeah
doing,
it's all being thanks to me. Now we've got lots of Strictly chat to get through, but we're going to go back. We've got to start with MIC. I mean, who isn't MIC these days? Well, you're one of the only original.
I was gonna say, you're an OG though, aren't you?
How did it start? How did it come about?
It kind of started because basically they wanted to create a TV show which was similar to The Hills. They wanted to create a version of The Hills but in the UK. And MTV were going to do it, and they were going to call it Smokers. And that was just a really bad name, and it was never going to work. Yeah, calling it Smokers. Really innovative of them. And then what happened was, Channel 4 came along, and they said, we want to do a TV show. We want to call it Chelsea Girls. We want to follow women who live in Chelsea and the lives that they lead. That, you know, think sort of Sex and the City. That's what it was going to be to begin with. And it kind of then sort of manifested and changed, and it became Made in Chelsea. So it was about a group of friends who live in Chelsea, who live a certain lifestyle, supposedly, and, you know, come from a sort of privileged background. That was the idea. And lots of my friends started doing it, and lots of us were asked, and I thought, it's the worst idea in the world. Why would you be wanting to follow around a camera because you're posh and things like this? And I thought it was honestly the worst idea, and I said, I would never do it in a million years. I would never, ever, ever do it. Probably like a lot of people said that. And when the first show happened, it came out, and my friend Spencer and Kagi and Hugo were all doing it.
So they were all pals already, right?
We were all friends, so all of us were really good pals. And it was sort of the right age and right time, I suppose. We were sort of that age. We were going out in London and things like that. And they did it, and I said, oh, it's the worst idea of your life. I don't know why you've done this, all those kind of things. And then it started to seem like it was a lot of fun. And meanwhile, I had just finished Leeds University with Fred. Fred Coleridge Cole.
I said, I need a bit of dirt on Jamie. So for our viewers listening, Jamie's looking a bit nervous now. We're actually on a Zoom call. And I said, come on, Fred, I need a bit of dirt. I'm interviewing Jamie on our podcast tomorrow. And he said, ask him to tell you the story about streaking across a varsity rugby game.
Yeah. I behaved really badly in a lot of ways, but I once thought it was a really good idea. It was Leeds University versus Leeds Met, and it was kind of like the Crips versus the Bloods. I don't know why, there was this weird rivalry between us. And I made a bet with my friend that I would streak across the rugby pitch. And what came to, we came into the stadium, there was about 40,000 people there, and suddenly I was being peer pressured into doing this dare, and I wasn't even drunk. I was like, surely I can't actually be doing this, but I'm at a new university, I need to really impress friends, I know how to impress people. This is what's really...
I think I'm a legend.
They're going to think I'm the biggest dude if I sprint across this rugby field naked. So I got naked in the stadium. I was shaking like a leaf. I was like, this is the worst thing. In midwinter in Leeds. And I ran across the pitch naked, ran up to a mutual friend of ours called Pete Eckersley, who was playing in it, and went to shake his hand. And he was so astonished that I was on the pitch. He didn't know what was going on. And then their number 8 dump tackled me onto the ground. And then I was handcuffed by the police and taken off the pitch.
Quite seriously, then.
Yeah, in front of 40,000 people. Anyway, they took me down to sort of the underneath in this place, and the security guards said, who are you? And I said, oh, I pretend like I couldn't remember my name. And
my name's it's Hercules.
Yeah, it's Hercules. Listen, you'll know my name one day when I appear on Strictly. That's what I said to him. You just watch this space.
Anyway, I'm going to be a star.
Yeah, I'm going to be a star.
So he said, of course, off you go.
he said, oh, what? You? So then he took me to the gates of the stadium. I'm completely butt naked, no shoes or no socks, nothing like that. And he pushed me outside the gates. I'm still handcuffed with these plastic handcuffs. And he said to me, these are the words he said to me. He said, go on, mate, you're either going to get nicked or...
And
I went, what? So I had to then go and bang on a random person's house, handcuffed with my head... And this actually really nice guy gave me clothes, which was nice of him. So that was pretty bad. But Leeds University was, you know, this amazing place where we kind of grew up and we did all these different things, and it was a lot of fun. But I also is where, going back to the question, is where I wanted to start this sweet company, had this sweet company idea, and the idea behind it was I wanted to make it a mixture between Willy Wonka and Hugh Hefner. This was the idea at the beginning, because I thought this would be a great idea. Surely sweets and like really beautiful people, and this is epic. And I then thought, well, okay, Made in Chelsea's still asking me to do this. I can go down this road where, you know, I came out of Leeds University with a 2-2 in theatre performance. I'm basically the most unemployable person that you can, like, I have no qualifications. I really am not that good at being told what to do. So I had a choice to go down a route which, you know, was always going to fail, which I was going to go down this sort of route of working in the city or something like that, or trying to get some sort of job, or go down this other route where I could start this sweet company and go and join a TV show where I had no idea what was going to happen. So I made a promise to myself. I kind of said, right, if I do this TV show, then I have to have a complete direction. I think it's really important in life, right, to have a direction. I was sitting with a guy once who he owns a big agency, and he was talking to giving advice. And he said, Jamie, if you're driving down the M1 to Leeds, never veer off to Manchester. Know exactly where your destination is, because otherwise you're going to get lost. And I went, okay, fine. So if I go and do Made in Chelsea and I want to start the sweet company, I have to know my direction. I have to know where I'm going to go and end up. Otherwise, all these things around me, I'm going to get lost and I'm going to have no brand whatsoever. So from the very beginning of that, I was like, right, it's going to be a huge risk. People are probably going to hate me because I'm just seem like some posh guy who doesn't, you know, lives off his parents' money. But I went and took the plunge and went and did it.
So are you saying that you saw Made in Chelsea as a bit of a route to putting yourself on the map to then being able to launch your own business in terms of candy cookies?
I think naivety is like one of the biggest weapons people have, and they are so underestimated. I think a lot of people, when going into different businesses or going into work or going into setting up a business, whatever it is, they follow like a blueprint. So for example, someone said to me once, I never follow logic, because if you follow logic, you get back in the same place as everybody else. And it's so true. Like, if you're setting up a brand or doing something, never follow logic, because why would you want to be in the same place as everybody else, a crowded place, go completely against the grain? And without knowing it, I said, well, it's going to be a great place to market candy kittens. I didn't really know what marketing was. I was 20. My quote back then was, the best business plan is no business plan. Take that to a bank. I mean, do you know what I mean? But it was the naivety.
Give them a few lols.
I told you, it's rolling in now, guys. It was the naivety that kind of helped me. I was very driven, always have been. I always knew what I wanted to do. I was never good at taking advice from anyone else. I always listened to my gut.
And why sweets? I mean, your family in McVitie's, is that right? Don't make that up.
Yeah. So my great-grandfather started McVitie's, yeah. But so, everyone tells me that I have these billions or millions. I haven't seen any of this money. So everyone thinks I'm some, like, billionaire prick who just got given... But I don't actually have any of it. So I have been called the prick, but actually I don't have any of the wealth either.
But you might have confectionery in your blood for those reasons.
I think I had entrepreneurship. I think being an entrepreneur is in the family. And I think it's one of those things where I kind of saw my parent and my dad and everyone always working for themselves. And I kind of thought, well, that's what I want to do. I never really understood the concept of making someone else's idea a success. Why wouldn't you just do it yourself if you want to do it? That's my personal opinion. Other people are totally different to me.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad, have you ever read that book?
Never read that book. Is it a good book?
It says that, I think, until June every year you work for the tax man. So it fits nicely with what you've just said. But sweets? Where did the idea of sweets come from? I have to say that my household, I was going to bring a packet up and sit them next to me, but I thought I'd eat them, and then I won't want to eat my supper. And I don't have much willpower, so I didn't bring them up.
They're the best. They are the best. The watermelon ones.
Oh, guys.
So good. The strawberries.
And the strawberry, yeah.
We're on the peach at the moment.
Peach. I was going to say, I couldn't remember what it was, but they're the ones that...
Let's
so
name
good.
Them all, and the blueberry ones.
They're all not an ad. Hashtag not an ad. We genuinely love your sweets. I mean, I do think it's clever. My husband was asking me about it, and he said, who is he? Who is this guy racking up my phone bill dressed as Hercules? And I was like, well, he's actually created a seriously freaking cool brand. And to be fair on him, it's in all the major stores. I mean, you can buy them everywhere now, right?
It's an interesting one because, people always ask why sweets. And I always think with businesses, right, you know, and you guys know this, you have to live and breathe it. So you have to do it. It has to be like your best mate. So, you know, I'm not going to go and set up, I'm not going to go and be Mr. Dyson and set up, you know, a Hoover, because I'm just not that interested in it. And I'm also not massively interested in making, money's not my driving, you know, thing. For me, you know, business is paid in two currencies, cash and experience. Take the experience first and the cash come later. It's just a byproduct of what you do. You don't go into business to make the money. For me, it's about enjoying and having fun. And as a kid, I was scared of the dark. This is true. I was scared of the dark. And I wasn't allowed sweets because I was too hyper. So my brother used to tell me a story of Jamie and Sweet World. And throughout my entire life, I wanted to have a world made of sweets. That was my dream. Went to New York, saw Dylan's Candy Bar, said, this is incredible. Want to replicate this in the UK. So this was the idea where Willy Wonka meets Hugh Hefner. Met my business partner, Ed Williams, who's just a genius, an absolute genius. And he said, listen, let's not do a sweet shop. Let's do packets of sweets. And it went from there. And it was just because I still do have this love for sweets. And I think sweets are nostalgic. I think they're delicious. I think they're all these different things. And what's interesting is that, you know, I get a lot of the credit for Candykins because I'm the face of it, all those different things. But without the team that we have around us, it would be, you know, I'm very much sort of Lewis Hamilton that way. You know, it's percentage.
Are you comparing yourself to Lewis Hamilton?
I was going
to
say,
you go aim high, Jamie.
Listen, Lewis Hamilton,
and there's Jamie Lang. I mean, there you go.
Potato, potato. But I think with, you know, I'm definitely sort of the pilot in a sense, but it's the whole engine that makes the whole thing work. And my business, without my business partner, it never would have worked. Without the team that we had, it never would have worked. And it was just, we were incredibly lucky with, and also incredibly unlucky in lots of different times. But thank God the luck outweighed the unluckiness.
How did you launch? Where did you begin the process? Was there one product? How did you start getting it into stores?
It's one of those weird ones where it's like impossible to Google how do you make sweets. I mean, that's literally what we did. We went, okay, we'll Google this, and nothing came up. We're like, so how the fuck do we make sweets? And it is really complicated process to do it. And like setting up any brand, like if you do a jewelry brand or you do a clothes brand, you have to find the factory to make the clothes or make the jewelry or whatever it is. And you have to, it's a very long process. So I was doing Made in Chelsea at the time. I was talking about this brand, Candy Kittens, that was a complete ghost, didn't exist. But I think also a lot of people sometimes try and protect their brand and don't talk about it. But I think actually talking about something then sort of brings it into reality a lot more. And I don't think you should be scared to talk about what you're trying to create. So I just spoke about it. And so we created this ghost. And so we were trying to make sweets, but the sweets took 2 years to make. So we started off just selling clothes. We set up a website and we started selling clothes that said, I'm a candy kitten on it, things like that. One of the most embarrassing moments of my entire life was I was walking down the road in London and there was a guy walking towards me wearing an I'm a candy kitten t-shirt. And we both looked at each other and he was really disappointed in himself. And I was so embarrassed.
Shame,
for him.
What are the chances? Yeah.
And I was like, God, we're both losers here. Like, it's really...
Sorry, I've got so... no sweets. I've got no sweets. And he's wearing a t-shirt with my name.
Yeah, yeah. But it took us, honestly, it took us 2 years to develop the sweets. We went to a sweet
convention.
Where are
they made?
So they were made in Spain to begin with in a company called Vidal. And then we moved over to a German company about 3-4 years ago now called Catchers, who make our sweets for us now. And they're wonderful. And they've sort of partnered up with us and things like that. And so, but it was a long process. And again, I go back, it was complete naivety. You know, the reason why our sweets were more expensive at the beginning is because we couldn't afford the margins. So we made them more expensive. And therefore, then they became a higher price gummy sweet, a sweet for adults. You know, we made them gluten-free because we thought, oh, that'd be nice. And, you know, then people started going on this trend of gluten-free. That's honestly it.
Yeah.
You know, we wanted to make them vegan because we thought, you know, that, you know, vegan takes out the gelatin, that's good. Then there was a whole vegan. It was a lot of naivety, not realizing what we were doing that actually sort of played a role. So I always think that anyone who's going to go into a business, follow your gut. Yes, take advice and those different things. But, you know, it's a lot of it is down to hard work, luck, and not taking no for an answer. We just never took no for an answer.
How much are they now?
So we have different price points. We have our big bags, which are £2.49, which we sell in sort of Waitrose and everywhere. Then we have another bag, which is a smaller bag, which goes for £1.25, I think it is. And then you have a £1 one as well. And so we do in different stages like that. That's how we
kind of price
it. And
they're sold where? Everywhere. I mean, they are everywhere, aren't they?
Yeah, they're sold. Tesco's, Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Asda, Morrison's.
And can you give us an idea on the size of the business? Like, you've got a team. I mean, I'm not expecting you to give us
all your numbers. Yeah, we're so loaded. It's funny, you know, FMCG kind of businesses, right? The margins are very tight. So, you know, I'll give you an example. Do you know Tony Tony's Chocolate.
Tony's Chocolate, yes.
Yeah, delicious, yes, right. Do. Tony's Chocolate, incredible
Charlotte's
brand.
Charlotte's Desk in our office, I mean, they are huge.
Not just specifically Charlotte. Charlotte and her team.
Charlotte just eats chocolate all the time.
She really does.
So Tony's Chocolate is an incredible brand. They, for the listeners, it's like a big, colourful Willy Wonka chocolate. You kind of would, if you recognise if you saw it.
Can we just say the speed at which they've created awareness for that brand is
amazing.
It's really incredible, isn't it?
This is my second podcast of the day, and it's my second Tony Chocolonely chat on a podcast of the day.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I swear.
No way.
Yeah. I'm their biggest advocate.
Yeah. You've been paid by Tony to say
I'm an ambassador,
But their story is interesting. So they basically, three journalists went to Africa to talk about how bad the cocoa trade was and did an article on it. Three Dutch guys. Anyway, no one took any notice of the article. So then they went and tried to set up a chocolate company and get themselves arrested for using slave labor. And that they didn't get arrested. So then they said, right, what we're going to do is we're going to set up a chocolate brand using a completely ethical way. So no slave labor, all this kind of stuff. You know, their turnover is 72 million euros a year. And they still don't make profit. They still don't make profit because margins are so tight in these things. Yeah. And so with sweets and stuff like that.
And lovely to dedicate some of your podcast to their success story.
Well done, guys.
I hope they're listening and I hope they do the same when it's their turn.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You know, the same with you guys, Shaylax. I'm a huge admirer of people who have built brands and built something. Because we all know how hard it is to do it. You know, you definitely get those sort of zero to hero stories of people who, you know, overnight successes. But it's very, very rare for that to happen. And it's a long, hard, scary, awful, exciting road. But it's a headache.
And but would you say that you are now over the tipping point? You know, when did you launch the business? What year?
So we launched it 8 years ago. We're the fastest growing confectionery business in the UK. So we
That's
sell a
mega.
Pack- yeah,
That's
which is mega. Very cool. Yeah, so we sell a packet of candy kitten sweets every 8 seconds.
Oh, I love a stat like that.
So
I love one of those.
But that's insane.
So,
yeah.
So cha-ching and cha-ching. Yeah. But I'm incredibly proud. But I had a lot of imposter syndrome with it to begin with, and I think that's happened with, you know, with a lot of different people. And I'm very proud of it now. I couldn't do it without the team and my business partner, and I'm super proud of all of them. And you know, we work our asses off, and you know, some months are good, some months are bad. When lockdown happened, we thought, god, we had to furlough 4 people and things like that, and then it kind of did a turnaround and actually went the opposite way, which was great for us. But I feel incredibly lucky and blessed. But it is also down to hard work. You just got to work hard with it.
And one thing I must have said is it must be weird coming out of Made in Chelsea, or being in Made in Chelsea, and people having this preconceived idea of you being some tough privileged guy with a McVitie's whatever business behind him. It is amazing, and you have built a really freaking cool brand, and you should be mega proud, and that's incredible, one every 8 seconds. So Like, yeah. I mean, you deserve that support more, because I'm sure people don't necessarily want to hand it out when they kind of have a preconceived idea of you. So it really is cool.
Yeah, totally. But Georgie, with you, so exactly with you know, sort of sheer luck, did you ever have that sort of imposter syndrome with it? Or were you always kind of like quite sort of like, nope? Yeah, it does, it happens, right?
But who are you if you don't stop and go, God?
Especially if you're young and you do it in your 20s as well. Yeah. It's one thing if you're 50 and you've got loads of life experience behind you and you set something up, but how could you not if you do something in your 20s?
I think the goalposts move, don't they? So you sort of think, God, I'll get to this stage of my business or this size of my business now, and I'll feel like I'm a success and I've made it. And then by the time you get there, you realise actually there's so much further to go and more to do. So you don't ever really stop and pat yourself on the back.
It's totally that, you know, exactly. And also, you know, when we first started, we were scrabbling, you know, and then we have like £1 million a month, and that now then it constantly goes ahead. But so when does that sort of stop going? So I think it's interesting. In Germany, right, 53% of businesses are still family-run. It's incredible. Yeah. And, you know, they're the third biggest economy. Yeah, and they're the third biggest economy in the world. I think that a lot of people are very quick to sell, and that's fine. And if you want to make money and do that, that's great. Alex Ferguson, ex-Manchester United manager, they said to him, why don't you retire? And he said, well, if I retire, I'm waiting to die. And it's kind of the same with a business. When you sell a business, yes, it's exciting, but then you kind of lose a sense of purpose. And yes,
I interviewed Charlie Bigham not very long ago. And I asked him about it, and he said, what is this obsession with being British and building a business and having to sell it? Why do we always just, why does the goal have to be to sell it? I have this weird thing that unless someone wants to buy my business, I don't feel like I'll ever have really succeeded in building something. So if no one else wants it, then what's the point? But I just did think when Charlie said that, what a good point. I'm also someone who thinks quit while you're ahead.
You might look bloody stupid. But you don't have to sell for somebody to want to buy your business. They're mutually exclusive.
It'd be nice to have them lining out around the block, though, wouldn't it?
It's nice to be popular, right? That's, you know, people like being popular. And if your business is popular and wanted to be bought, then it's a very flattering thing. But I definitely agree with Charlie Bingham. I think that we have this obsession with building business and selling them. Honestly, if you build a business and it's a success to the point where someone wants to buy it, keep hold of it. I don't understand, you know, because you can then drive a faster car or have a bigger house, I suppose, but actually you kind of lose the sense of purpose. We get given this assumption, this idea that actually making money and all that is that success side of things is what gives you all the happiness, but it actually isn't. There's two levels of happiness, the higher level and the lower level. The lower level is fame, wealth, power, all the things that you want to achieve. But when you achieve these things, you actually don't realize why you're not happy. The higher level is loyalty, friendship, relationships, purpose. And I think that's
you got to make some money to sustain your business, though. That's the only catch.
True. But I think that's the...
It's not everything.
Yes. It's lovely to have the liberty to do what you want to do. But I don't understand the obsession with wanting to sell. That's sometimes what I don't get. But if someone wants to buy a company, great.
But if you're in the market for a confectionery company. So you're not planning to sell. What comes next? More flavours? Other products? What is the plan for Candy Kittens?
Well, you know, we sold 50% of our business to this German company. So they own 50% of the business, and then me and my business partner own the rest. And we want to start moving into the States. We just launched in Walmart in the States, which is really amazing and really exciting.
Again, massive.
Yeah, it's really. And Walmart.
You were quite clever with your name there as well, weren't you, Candy? That's quite smart.
Make it universal. That was always the idea from the beginning. And also just dropping a little shop called Walmart.
You may have heard of Walmart.
But again, it's a different beast. And I tell you what really sort of makes you feel good. I can't even think of the word right now. It's all that Samba I've been doing today. But have you ever read a book called Shoe Dog, which is the guy who started Nike?
Yeah, he
always talks about how, you know, he was always upset and concerned and disappointed and worried, until they floated their company, until they made it go public. And then he made a huge heap of money. But he was always concerned every single day that it was going to fail. And I think that's kind of where we always are, always thinking that surely at some point someone's going to find out that we're not experts.
Old imposter syndrome, isn't it, rearing its ugly head?
Look at that little cyclical we just did.
So tell us, what is life like in the public eye? Do you enjoy it? Like, you have committed now to a way of life, haven't you? And, you know, you're so watchable and entertaining. Also super smart, clearly. But, like, you have made your bed. You made your bed, really. And you're going to have to lie in it now.
And you are lying in it because you're still in Maiden Chelsea, right? So you haven't opted out yet.
I've taken a back seat.
Step back a bit.
What have I done? I've taken something.
Got you.
I've taken something. Look, what do I think about fame in general? I think that fame is... Jude Law said something once, which is, so he said, don't believe the hype. Don't believe the hype. I mean, it is honestly... Yes, having some sort of, we were never famous. I definitely thought I was way more famous when I was younger. I was like, Jesus, I am famous.
And
actually, I was just a complete prick. I think that's about it. But I think, firstly, it's nonsense. Secondly, it's one of these things that you think you need to always have if you have it. And this is what I thought at the beginning. I thought, what happens if I suddenly I'm not known or something? And it doesn't really matter at all. And I'm definitely not Justin Bieber, where people are following me with paparazzi, you know. They'll be like, oh, there's that bloke from Strictly. That's pretty much what you get. So it's totally fine and relaxed. And there's lots of positives to it. And there's also lots of negatives. There was Matt Damon said once, it's so true. He said he's so happy that he won an Oscar when he was really young, and he won it for Good Will Hunting because he realised how insignificant it is.
I always tell people that quote. Yeah, he said on Graham Norton, and he was like, I realise how, what an anticlimax it is, and I'm so lucky I learned that at such a young age.
Yeah. It's so true. And I think it's the same with fame. Fame is a real anticlimax because you think, you're like, oh, well, I'm going to be the happiest person ever. And then you suddenly go, oh, it's just not. It's just... the same thing as everyone else, just people want to take your picture more.
Did you have a turning point? Because you said it's nonsense, but obviously there was the bit at the beginning where you thought it was so fabulous. So did something happen that made you realise, whoa, I need to step back a bit and get some perspective?
I mean, there were lots of things. Main Chelsea in the beginning, you know, we had to do these things called PAs, and basically you were paid to go to a nightclub.
Yeah.
And you were paid to go and drink. And
tough, isn't it? I mean,
it was really awful.
But it must take its toll. Like, in all seriousness, that actually must take its toll a bit.
Yeah, that's why it's at the beginning. It's like, well, I mean, paid this amount of money to turn up to a nightclub and just do this. And, you know, you think you're a rock star because you go onto these days and people scream. And you're filled with sort of this false image of yourself almost. And then what happens is that you neglect friends, you neglect family, you become a bit too big for your boots, naturally. And you suddenly get to an age, which I was about 26, 27. And I suddenly was like, oh my God, I've been a real arsehole for quite a long time. And I was never mean or anything like that. It's just, I was so self-centered. And I drank too much and I wasn't focusing on, you know, I was running a business and my business partner was every day just exhausted with my attitude and things like that. And so it was a point where I was about to go to the south of France to film in the south of France. And I remember I wanted to go on a night out and I remember thinking, who do I phone right now? Who do I phone? And I was like, God, I haven't spoken to that guy for a long time. And I haven't spoken to that person for a long time. And neglected that person and not picked that person's calls up. And suddenly I was like, wow, it was a real sort of turning point that I had probably not behave the best way. And you know, friends and family are so important.
I mean, I wish I was writing down. I mean, there's
so many tips.
There's a tips to Christmas stocking filler in Jamie Lang, I think. Ling Lang. How do I pronounce your surname?
Honestly, anyway, I'm like Bowie. Is it Bowie? Like Bowie.
But what do you say? Yes, you compare yourself to some very highfalutin people in this podcast.
Just comparing myself to Lewis Hamilton, David Bowie. But it's meant, it's Scottish, so it's meant to be Lang, but Lang. My entire life everyone has said Lang, so I just honestly, it doesn't bother
it's
me
not, though, is it?
Honestly, it doesn't matter. Someone once introduced me as someone completely different at like an award show, and I was like, oh my God, this is embarrassing. Nodded. It's not even embarrassing for him, it's embarrassing for me. Yes, I am embarrassed right now.
I've got down on my list of questions that we need to ask you about Sophie. Now, we got a lot of love for Sophie at Sheerlarks. She's an absolute rock star. What a babe. Yeah. I mean, you must be pinching yourself, frankly.
Listen, I definitely do. I mean, when we walk down the street and the guys are looking at me and they just think, how? I go... Listen, she says the same thing, I think. I'm sort of quite known for having different relationships, but with Soph, she's just, she's a rock star, man. And I think with what's important in relationships is that you want to be with your mates because you have to hang out with each other a lot. and they have to be your freaking buddy. And yeah, we're just so buddies. And also, she's better than me in every way. She's hotter. She's got better legs. She's can speak Spanish. You know, so she's just awesome.
Do you love her more than she loves you? I read somewhere once that said, in a relationship, one person is always going to love the other one slightly more. I said to her husband, how's that feel? He's like, yeah, I mean.
She's annoyed when I said to her, I say that I love her. And then she told me to stop saying it so much. I was like, what? She goes, and she said, because it's meaningless. I was like,
that would mean something.
And then also, and she'll hate me for saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Things like, okay, during lockdown, I put on a little bit of weight, all right? And, you know, in lockdown, you're spending a lot of time with each other. So we thought, okay, maybe we'll get intimate with each other tonight. And I got on top of her and she went, ugh. And I was like, sorry, what? And she went, get on with it. And I
went, that was so flattering.
Yeah, and I was like, sorry that I put on weight and that this is an issue for you. Yeah.
So, well, thankfully, you're now practicing the Sambra all day. So that weight is gone.
Yeah, now I honestly walk in here and she's like, well, is that dancer I see from the TV? I'm just like, yeah, it might be.
But it's all good, right? You guys seem like dreamily happy. And
how long have you been together?
We've been together sort of officially for about a year, but we've sort of been dating for a year and a half, two years maybe. We've been sort of dating each other. And it's cheesy, but I'm a way better person because of her. And she's just a good person. She made me into a sort of better person, I think.
Oh, that's how it should be. And she's poodling around in the kitchen making you supper, I think.
She does. And also she gets, honestly, so we moved into this new flat and we have a sofa, right? We have a sofa that we're meant to watch. I can't even sit on the sofa. I'm not allowed to because apparently I make it dirty.
My husband's like, you tidy me away if we could.
Yeah. I'm literally like, where do I sit? So I came back.
Your zone. This is your zone. Do not leave any belongings.
No belongings anywhere. So I have to like sit on like the carpet and then she'll get up and clean the carpet as well. I'm like, I'm not that dirty.
How are you with poofing cushions?
I don't poof. She does, honestly. And then I make the bed sometimes and she'll remake the bed because I've done it wrong.
Isn't it? Just a tip for you, Jamie. The zips on the cushions, they go down.
Oh, but even boys know that. Down. Come on.
No, I've been married. I've been married, 14 years? The zips still don't go down.
Oh, my like, nose.
Fuck's sake, I mean.
But she is, and as you guys, you know, so the relationships are hard. Charlotte, are you in a relationship?
I am married.
She's a married lady.
Chucks, there we go.
Damn it. That one's out.
Relationships are hard. So, you know, and they're not the easiest things in the world. And I'm freaking difficult. And, you know, you guys are probably difficult, but
I think everyone's difficult.
Yeah.
Do you know what? They shouldn't be that hard. Like,
no.
If it's meant to be at this stage of our lives, I mean, I'd like to think I'm your age, sadly. Charlotte,
I'm with you, do me a favour.
Charlotte, that sarcastic head tilt.
Yeah, it was a little. She knows I was 40 last week. She thinks I'm another generation. I am.
When's your birthday?
It was on Wednesday. Oh, hang on. Same as you.
Are you 3rd November?
3rd November.
Everyone is 3rd of November. Yeah,
I know.
Everyone is the best people.
I saw that actually.
On It Takes Two on your birthday, actually.
Thanks, guys.
Happy birthday, wasn't it?
Happy birthday to you, too.
Thanks.
But also, yeah, I agree with you, relationships. I mean, when I say that, relationships aren't hard, but they're also, you have to work on them. You know, I'm irritating. Like, I'm irritating.
You have to work on yourself in a relationship.
I'm a fucking pain. I mean, I send everything back in a restaurant. My husband and I, we went away for my birthday.
No, you don't.
And they bought me a Hendrix and Slimline tonic with no cucumber. And I think I asked for cucumber 4 times. To the extent I got up and went to the kitchen and said, could I have some cucumber? This is true. They said, we'll bring you some cucumber. And they then came along with a tray and he tried to take, I said, do not take that glass. Put it down. I said, all I want is this cucumber. They went.
I would have poisoned your drink. If I was the bottle, I would have poisoned
it. Well, my husband and I, that's why I wasn't letting him take my glass, because I thought he might spit in it. I said, bring me the cucumber and I can wipe it down. Anyway, my husband and I wipe it down.
Why were you going to wipe it down?
Because he might have licked it or trodden it or something.
Right. So, anyway, where's he going to put the cucumber that you need to wipe it down?
My husband and I we so then got the giggles, the two of us, about my cucumber scenario. So, you know, all I'm saying is, if it's not good in the early days, if it's that hard, then...
I totally agree with you.
You know what I mean, don't you?
Yeah, I absolutely know what you mean. And I've been in many relationships where I've sort of continued it when it probably isn't right, and probably likewise all the way around. But with Soph, I'm very blessed that it's pretty effortless.
And it's been a hard year for all relationships as well. You know, if you're going to be tested, I think this was the year to be tested.
Yeah, God, going into lockdown together. Poor Soph had to come down to the countryside because I honestly went like Rambo and said, they're going to be looting. People are going to be going through the windows.
I did that. I stockpiled. Not important things, I should say, like dairy milk.
I was knocking old people out of the way.
Tony, chocolate, candy, kittens.
I'm the special person who didn't bother taking any toilet roll, just chocolate. Like, that was me. But yeah, no, it was fine.
I heard Charlotte used to go and used to beat up all the old people in there.
Yeah, that was me. Get off my Tony.
Get out of the way, you vulnerable person.
Jamie, we got to get back onto Strictly before we finish. So you're having a ball, and you're doing the Samba next week. How is it in lockdown? Is it, I mean, obviously you had a taste of what it was like last year. I've been to the show, haven't mentioned, a couple of times to watch it. It's great fun.
How long is that in the audience?
When Sophie came in to record Lux Girl, then she was like, and Jamie thinks I'm going every week. I was like, hon, do you know how long it is? I was there, you're there for hours. She's like, also, I know.
It's probably shorter this year because they've done the group dance already, right? Those are pre-recorded, so it's normally longer. Right.
Yes, yeah, so it is. So it's still, it's about 7 hours. with a group dance, and also for continuity, you all have to stay in your chair.
Yeah.
Firstly, I was in the dance off, and I looked at Sophie, and I thought she was going to pee herself with disappointment and upsetness. She was just so nervous. And then the other time was just after I danced, I looked at her like this, and I was like, oh my God, like, you know, was it okay? And she just looked at me and went, I'm freezing. I was like, perfect.
Thanks for the support.
Thanks for the support. Just sitting with it. And she had to wear this mask, that see-through mask that just squashed face. Oh, so she looked awesome.
That's love, isn't it? But she can't come now, right?
She can't come now, but honestly, I think she gets pretty much a routine every night anyway. And do you know what? She's my harshest critic, but the best one. She'll say to you, Jamie, honestly, you're shit. I don't know what else to say. And I'm like, but can you not see my lines here? And then she's like, no, you're shit. I don't like, and you open your mouth and I try to show her this dance routine. And she said, honestly, I can't watch you irritate me too much with your mouth. So I can't watch it.
She keeps you grounded.
I think, Jamie, on that note, given that you've got the Samba to do on Saturday, I'm concerned that, you know, it's got a bit of a stigma attached that you better get training. And
100%.
I think we better leave it there. But what fun to chat to you.
Thanks. And also, guys, can I just say, I'm a huge admirer of your brand as well. I think it's incredible what you guys have done. I think it's really amazing, and you guys, in the most unpatronizing way, you should be so proud. It's really freaking amazing.
Oh, that's super kind. Thank you. That means a lot. So much like in Strictly. We will be voting. My husband will be cursing your name every Saturday. Long may it last. And keep sending the candy kittens because we love them. If you haven't bought them, buy the candy kittens because damn good. That's it for this week. If you enjoyed that, then do please rate, review, subscribe, and tell your friends. We'll be back soon. Bye bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.